Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Ghirelli, Italy's premier rosary designer, creates beautiful heirloom quality rosaries for every season and celebration. Hundreds of unique rosaries honoring Jesus, Mary, and the saints await you at Ghirelli.com. With CMF Curo, you don't have to compromise your faith to get great health care. Finally, there is a pro-life option that respects and engages your Catholic faith with a community that supports you in living healthcare fully alive. Learn more at mycatholichealthcare.com/podcast. Introducing the redesigned catholicsingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used catholicsingles.com, and the reimagined catholicsingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, catholicsingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
It's Friday, and we got a great big Friday show for you while you abstain from meat and limit your caloric intake. I am Cy Kellett, your host, and we're going to have a great conversation for 2 hours. You're welcome to participate if you'd like to get in on the conversation. 888-31-TRUTH remains the number, as always. And our interlocutors today are two, what do we call them, bigwigs around here at Catholic Answers. We welcome first the chaplain, because we're nothing if not clerical around. Our chaplain is Father.
I'd rather think not.
Our chaplain
is definitely in the minority.
You are not a clericalist, Father. I thought you had suddenly taken offense to what I just said, but no, you were just adjusting the microphone. I was in trouble with the chaplain. Father is a Norbertine priest from St. Michael's Abbey in Orange County, where he served previously as the prior of that abbey for 133 years. He also received his education in
dog years. Yeah,
dog years. Okay, in Rome.
Well, actually, in dog years, it would be about 1,000. But anyway,
yeah. But how? Okay, fair enough. Then, how many years were you the prior?
22.
22 years. All right. Well, welcome and thank you for being with us, Father, for this panel discussion.
Happy to be here.
His education was in dogmatic theology. This one. Have you used that one already? I'm sorry.
No, we've never done it. But I'm sure we'll be using it many times.
It was catechism, actually. That,
the other. This
is for the birds. Let's keep going.
Our other panelist today for the panel conversation is Todd Aguilaro, who is the director of publishing here, father of, I was trying to remember, but I'm going to say a.
I'm still waiting on NASA to come back with that number, so I think it's seven.
Though. Seven, yeah. Okay. Good to have you. Thanks for being with us, Todd.
Oh, it's always a pleasure.
We'll try to fix that today. some serious stuff to talk about these 2 hours. First hour, we're going to spend talking about marriage. We might even say the crisis in marriage. Marriage is in difficult straits. You both may know the history of it more than I have. Maybe this is maybe marriage is one of those things that's always in difficult straits. I don't know, but it seems particularly bad right now. So I will start you off with a question, and we'll see where we can go from there. And again, you're welcome to participate in our conversation. 888-318-7884 is the number. Well, let me just start it right there. Is what it feels like, is this one of those, well, your feelings are deceiving you, or is it real? Marriage is in very bad shape.
I would say you're right to say there's a crisis. It's been going on for a while, but marriage is two things. It's natural and it's supernatural. It's a natural institution upon which society is based. All human societies are based on marriage. And then as a sacrament, it's a supernatural institution. And in both aspects, it is very, very much tried in our time, to be sure.
All right. What's your sense of that?
Well, the numbers bear it out. I mean, You can hardly go 2 days, it seems, without coming across a new stat about divorce rates or especially plummeting marriage rates.
Yeah.
And there seems to be a generational decision to marry later and later or to marry less and less and certainly to have fewer children.
But you were going to say, Father? Certainly part of the crisis we could see, for example, in divorce rates, which have skyrocketed since maybe the 1970s, maybe even before that. I'm not sure exactly when the start date of that would have been. And then we could certainly talk about the changes to the definitions of marriage that include now gay marriage, but seem to be trending towards plural marriage as well and various other things. But let's not start with all of that. I think Todd starts in a good spot. Why are people delaying marriage? Why are people not even bothering with marriage? That would seem to me the starting point of the crisis. Like if you won't even do it, if you won't even get involved in a marriage, that's trouble.
Well, it seems like it's a confluence of factors. It's tough to point to any one thing. There's a trend in the world for sure towards greater selfishness, towards living for one's own fulfillment and one's own pleasures of this world. And of course, living for those things and the sacrifices that are inherent with marriage are often contradictory. So marriage and family life can be seen as a drag on one's self-fulfillment. I mean, that's just a piece of the puzzle, but certainly a large cultural one, I think.
Or what Pope Benedict calls a failure of hope. That is, if you're not even interested in handing on what you have acquired and what you have to another generation, then fundamentally you're saying you don't have hope for the future for humankind or the human race as such. You know, you just can live out your life as happily as you can, and you don't think that the good things that you have are sufficiently compelling to give to another generation.
Sexual suicide, I think, is a term I've come across. I'm forgetting who coined it. I think it was a book. You help me out with this, Father?
I'm trying to remember.
Ringing a bell for you, but it was a
I usually try to avoid books with titles
it's a sociological term coined to describe a culture. Oh, I've got a computer in front of me. I could have asked that. That has lost hope in the future and no longer seeks to reproduce itself because it doesn't see value in doing so.
And I think that's the key. Why do people not marry? Well, in order to do anything with any kind of gusto or desire, you have to see the end or the purpose of it. You have to desire it.
Yeah.
And it starts with contraception. And the idea that the principal end of marriage, the first end of marriage, is not procreation of children, but just the satisfaction of the desires of the couple, whether they be noble or otherwise. Then after that, of course, the very reason for the stability of marriage goes away, because if you don't have to have kids, then you don't have to stay together,
right?
Because the indissoluble marriage is for the protection and education of the family,
right?
The stability of not just your generation and the one you bring about, but their progeny, your children, your children's children. And so it all comes together. So I think you go contraception, divorce, and then everything else follows.
And Todd, you were going to say?
Well, two things. One, George Gilder is the author of the book Sexual Suicide, 1973. He was an American historian. But it's a phrase that's kind of entered the conversation. But to piggyback on Father's point and to perhaps be a little generous towards the younger generations, is not just selfishness. I don't think there's and this is something I've read in numerous places, a bit of disgust, a bit of disillusionment with the divorce culture of the prior generation or the prior two generations.
Yeah.
And a sense, hey, I'm not going down that road. I saw how that ended up. It's phony, or I'm not going to put children through what I went through or what, previous generation went through. So it's not just they all want to live for themselves. I think there's a timidity about entering into that state of putting oneself at risk when you're biting off a lot when you get married, when you have children, you're taking a lot of risks.
The challenges that will come from some hearing a conversation like this, one, I imagine, will be, well, these are men who just want to go back to the 1950s and put women back in the home.
No, let's say the 1750s, maybe.
Well, the 1750s in many ways would be better than the 1950s, frankly. I mean, there's something so isolating and demeining to women in the 1950s.
The 50s were the beginning of the whole strategy of destroying the extended family. It was already happening.
But yeah.
It's happening in the 20s, yeah. And then World War II kind of accelerated it. But yeah.
But people, many people look back to the 1950s as basically the beginning of human history. I mean, there's not much before that in our general.
You call them conservatives in our country.
Oh. Father,
it's kind of ridiculous.
Oh, that's good. We're going to make enemies there. That's good.
Well, no, but that's as yeah. far back as we go.
But the, okay, so fair enough. If there is something. There is something to be said for the person who says, "Well, what do you want? The 1950s marriage where a woman lived in desperate straits?"
No.
And the answer is no. We don't want that.
Isolated in suburbs with a bunch of appliances and
right.
And
she
her
lives
two
with
children,
her, yeah.
Wally and what's his name, and then Dad who comes in who knows best.
Wally and Beaver.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Dad who knows best was a different show, but yeah.
I know. But I mean, I'm combining. It's a yeah. conflated. You know.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So I wanted to get to that, but you got to it very quickly. Yeah. So it is not advocating a 1950s mentality to say to call for a return to marriage. That, as a matter of fact, the 1950s we could look at as the beginning of the destruction of marriage,
or at least actually when it really begins to take shape. Yeah.
Yeah.
No doubt.
Okay. The other objection. I totally forgot because you upset me so much.
I'm sorry. But, what did I do when I said conservatives? I'm sorry.
No, you didn't upset me, Father. Go ahead, Todd.
I mean, if you want to say that we're not really advocating a return to the 50s because things were already in decline in the 50s.
There you go.
But okay. that's we don't want to say also that it was the same as it is today. I mean, the 50s.
No.
Just again, going back to the numbers, the families were intact. Divorce rates were low. We didn't have no-fault divorce
right.
nationwide and all across the Western world as we do now. Out-of-wedlock birth was a small fraction of what it is today. So while not looking back on those days with a kind of Pollyanna vision, let's not fail to give it its due either.
No doubt, yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. It was after Sunday Mass, and there was a couple who I'd mentioned – divorce in the homily, although it wasn't about that, because I don't like to give homilies that are just about a sad moral topic, the whole thing, because people go away feeling. So I use it as an example among others, and I mentioned divorce, and this couple came out, and they were in the 70s or early 80s, and they told me that they had met 2 weeks after World War II ended, and he had been in the service, and they decided to get married after those 2 weeks. And they got married. And then after 6 months, they felt they should call it quits. And so they went to get a divorce. And the judge, seeing the two of them and reading what they had produced, said, "Now, you young people, you haven't really given it a try. You need to go home and make it work."
Imagine
no, I'm
that
not.
Today.
I'm not granting you a divorce.
Imagine that.
And so, like obedient kids of those days,
they went back and tried.
Right, because they had a society there where the society took an interest in the stability of marriage.
Yeah, right.
And was willing to teach and instruct. And that's the problem: is that once they had no-fault divorce, it shows that society, the government has everyone's abandoned any.
There's nothing defending marriage.
Not just abandoned it, Father, has replaced it. So there's a. Not to sound too conspiratorial, and it's not a blanket explanation, but when in the vacuum created by the breakdown of the family, who steps in, the state, and
the media,
well,
to take care of your children.
Yes, I mean the media kind of serve that function, but the state becomes the principle of stability. Mm-hmm. The state becomes the thing that takes care of you when you're old. The state becomes the thing that watches your kids when you're at work, et cetera.
That's very good. That's a good connection we could make between the claim that church and state should be radically separated and then a state which doesn't admit the permanency of marriage, which basically means the state takes up the function of the church and of marriage.
Well, the state certainly, without question, took up the function of fathers, starting with public housing and welfare programs. Whatever positive things may be said about those things, the state replaced the father in the lives of many, many people.
Yeah, the breadwinner,
But the Catholic idea of marriage is that marriage is the foundational community, I suppose, in a society of communities. Would that be a fair way to say it? All right, so that's what I want to get to when we get back, a society of communities, and that Which addresses your point as well, Todd, that a society denuded of communities becomes just the individual and the state. There's nothing else.
It becomes atomized, as
right.
Some people
have right. Yes. But we have to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more conversation about marriage with Todd Agliolaro, the director of publishing here at Catholic Answers, and with Father Hugh Barber, the chaplain here at Catholic Answers, right after this.
You're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their Catholic values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit MysticMonkCoffee.com. That's MysticMonkCoffee.com.
Why do we need Catholic radio? Because not everybody's sitting in front of a computer or watching their television set at home. How about when driving to work? Catholic radio's there for you. I may be a Catholic priest, but I'm still a student of the faith. And Catholic radio helps supply good material, whether it be a question and answer format show, whether it be a show itself on doctrine or theology. I myself, as a priest, am always learning.
Father Wade thinks Catholic radio is important. So should you.
Back to Catholic Answers Live. It's our panel show today, Friday panel show, and on our panel, Todd Agliolaro, director of publishing here, and our chaplain, Father Hugh Barber. We're talking this first hour about the crisis in marriage. You're welcome to participate. 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-318-7884. At least part of what occasioned this conversation, I didn't even mention the first time, and that is in the first segment, and that is that Todd wrote a book about marriage. And it's called Marriage and Sex.
20 Answers, Marriage and Sex is part of our 20 Answers booklet series.
And what did you say? Let? What?
Booklet. I don't want booklet. To take too much credit.
Oh, I see. I see. I'd say if I wrote it, I'd say book, man. I'd say book. If it's got a spine on it and I wrote it, that's a book. Okay. So did you want to share some of this from the book, from the conversation that we just had? You deal with this in the book.
Well, when I talk in the beginning, so our 20 answers series proceeds, as you know, with it's like a 20 questions. So there's answers to 20 questions about the subject. And in taking up one of the very early questions about what marriage is, I talk about its different dimensions. As Father said, it's both natural and supernatural, for example. But I also talk about how it's an institution, and it serves the function of if I recall how I put it, tying together all of our strands of belonging and identity. It takes individuals, it unites them to others, and it makes of those united individuals a community. So to get back to what you said about how it's the basic unit or the kernel of an entire community.
Okay, so as that kernel, does the church then teaches that it has its own rights, or it has its own it can insist on things, or do you know what I'm saying? Like,
well, I think the church teaches that our laws and the functions of a society ought to be subordinated to and ordered towards rather the interests of the family rather than of the individual or of a collective, for example.
Why is that controversial? I mean, it seems so basic that a healthy society is made up of healthy families, and that you couldn't get something more controversial than saying, well, the state should be ordered for the good of the family.
Well, I think that what happened is that the sense of family as household was very much weakened over time, because the household used to be almost like in the mid-19th century was practically a self-contained unit, you know, where the everything that was needed was produced within the family practically for day-to-day life.
Yeah.
And, it was an agricultural model. And so the family had a much wider scope in life, in the household, therefore, it included employees, included the work enterprises, included extended family, all of that. And as it got more and more pulverized, you might say atomized, until right as we were talking about the 50s, you get this just nuclear family of a father, a mother, and two children.
Yeah.
And they do not there's no indication that they are in any way self-sufficient. They're dependent upon the society around them, and also of working for another company, not for themselves, and all that. And not all of that is evil. Some of it is very great because it actually allowed a level of health and prosperity for large numbers of people.
Well, it's connected that, economics, but you said working for a company instead of family business
but
or farm.
All those things can be very, very good, but they would be good in a society that, as the church promoted in the 30s with Pius XI, a notion of a society where the business interest and industrial interest saw the single income family as the standard.
Right, right.
You know, and that was the standard, and so that they'd be able to have children and raise them, so on, for the good of society.
Yeah, and the economy adjusted.
Right, because nowadays they look at they make it sound as though that's impossible. You have to have a two income household, and therefore you can't have as many children because both parents work and so on and so forth.
There was a good piece I was reading just a few days ago. I don't want to say the Atlantic, maybe it was National Review, but it was about what a middle class family on a average, you know, working dad's salary could afford to do in the 50s, go on vacation, buy a new car, allow the mother to stay at home, raise the children, keep the house, that sort of thing. And even though we're wealthier than ever before and our standard of living is higher by leaps and bounds than it was 60, 70 years ago, I know a lot of middle-class families. I'm not going away for a week in the mountains every summer. I'm not.
No, right, right. You can't do it anymore.
No, and it seems as if that adjustment to the two-earner family, the double-income, no-kid family, or just the one or two children. I'd add, too, that to glom onto Father's point, I believe it was more than just atomization, but there seemed to be – and I watched a lot of television in the 70s and 80s. I'm embarrassed to admit it, but I've got a lot of 70s and 80s sitcoms in my head.
Welcome back, Cotter.
That's right. And on reflection now, years later, I'm able to discern how many of those shows and to this day were about deconstructing the family and offering us alternative versions of the family.
Right.
Even now with the story in the news now about these the higher education scandals, now everybody's remembering Full House again. Now, there wasn't anything really nefarious about Full House. It was a fairly wholesome show for its time. And yet it, too, was about presenting us some other version of what a family is, mother, father, children as the nucleus of it. But whether it's friends moved in with you or two women raising children or two men raising children or two men raising somebody else's children, whatever it may be. This way of breaking down our thinking about what constitutes a family until a family is whatever you want it to be. And, of course, we've seen that analog with marriage now.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah.
Marriage is whatever you define it as.
888-318-7884, our number. I keep hearing objections in my mind as certain things are said. And I want to address the economic point that you both made. And there's something to the – there's this argument that, look, it was proposed that women should have the option of being in the workplace all of which sounds very, very good. But the fact is that as more people choose that option, the people who don't choose that option become more and more disadvantaged. And so you create a disadvantaged group. You actually disadvantage the thing that is probably best for the children. I know that many people will find that offensive, but that's the case. You create a situation where you economically disadvantage the marital arrangement that is best for probably the husband, the wife, and the children. Mm-hmm. And you make constant work the more advantaged and more lauded position. Two things about that. There will be the objection, look, people are just greedy. That's why they have these two person they're both working all the time and they won't have any kids. People are greedy. They want the big screen TV, which they used to say that, but now a big screen TV costs about $11 at Walmart or something. So you can't say big screen TV anymore. But, you know, they want the fancy cars and they want the this and they want the that. If people just wanted less, they could do it. I am not convinced that argument is actually true, but I wanted to throw it out to you.
No, I don't think – I think that on the part of families, the limiting the number of children is largely based upon – an economic necessity. They're in a situation where they're simply not able to, within their lights. I mean, some people they're more resourceful, or they have a stronger conviction about the matter. But it's not that all of this is not to be hard on couples who find themselves having to have two incomes and then have a difficulty considering how they could have more than two or three children.
Right.
I mean, this is a real problem in our culture, and you don't want to be hard on people for that.
No.
And none of this is a judgment on them. It's just that society has set itself up so that basically everything works for the economic entity for which people work to make them money,
yeah.
But not to promote the households of the people who are there. And that's where our society has just been turned upside down.
Well, that's generous of Father being as someone who's not in the world towards those of us who are. I would probably half agree and half disagree. I think there's definitely been an adjustment as to what constitutes kind of a minimum level of comfort.
Mm-hmm. So you
mentioned the big screen TV. It's not super expensive. In fact, that's an additional point, is that we've seen the cost of some things rise tremendously, while others in adjusted dollars have decreased. Electronics,
yeah.
Cars, food to some extent, but things like higher education and housing.
Scam. Oh,
well. So, I mean, if you were to start and say, what's the number one reason you're economically limiting, or what's the number one economic reason that you're limiting the number of children you want to have?
Right.
And they're going to say it's pay for college.
Yeah, college, and they might throw healthcare in there, but primarily it's because how are we going to afford college for seven kids?
Yeah. So they're not saying, look, I need three cars, I need the Hawaii vacation every year.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think our baseline notion of what's minimally comfortable has probably gotten higher.
Again, 888-318-7884 is our number. Our guests are Todd Aguilar. Excuse me, Todd. Yeah, I got so excited about Todd being here for once. Todd Aguilar, the director of publishing here at Catholic Answers, and Father Hugh Barber, chaplain here at Catholic Answers and priest extraordinaire. Really? I heard that you have that title, priest extraordinaire.
Is that a new category?
It's an honorary title.
Yes, an honorary. They got rid of Monsignor.
Extraordinary minister.
And now,
of what?
Now they've got priest extraordinaire. But young men, they won't marry. Although, look, there's lots of people who want to marry, can't find anybody to marry. That's a real thing that's happening. There's lots of lonely people who can't find someone to hang out with because they're home playing video games. And that's a lot of that falls on men. So let's take some time and talk about what's happening to young men, and what happened to the feeling I want to be a man and get married and have children and all that? Whatever happened to that? We'll tackle that with Todd and Father when we come back right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Join us on air today on Catholic Answers Live.
A generation ago, Christian parents didn't have to worry about how to explain transgenderism to their 9-year-old children or help their teenager deal with mockery at school for believing in traditional marriage. But today, as our culture decays, we have to know how to talk to our children about these issues. In Made This Way, How to Prepare Kids to Face Today's Tough Moral Issues, Layla Miller and Trent Horn give parents the crucial tools and techniques to form children with the understanding they need, appropriate to their age and maturity level, to meet the world's challenges. If we're not teaching our children how to understand tough moral issues, then the world will. Read Made This Way and learn how to give your kids a firm foundation on which to build a life of moral clarity and happiness. Order your copy of Made This Way today by calling 1-888-291-8000 or logging onto the shop at Catholic.com.
Love and beauty. As a little girl, Dawn Eden Goldstein knew that she wanted those things, that in them somehow she would find God. Over the years as a rock journalist, she moved among some of popular music's best-known artists, straining to capture that transcendent love and beauty in every note and lyric. In Sunday Will Never Be the Same, Dawn recounts her spiritual journey in beautifully wrought detail, mixing powerful accounts of trauma, healing, and epiphany with funny anecdotes from inside the music scene. It is the rare conversion story that delights as it inspires, amuses as it edifies, and ultimately lays before the reader a lived testimony to the transforming grace of Christ. Order your copy of Sunday Will Never Be the Same by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Let us help you with your question today on Catholic Answers Live.
Hi, it's Debbie Giorgiani. Join Jerry and I on Take Two with Jerry and Debbie Monday as we revisit the clergy sex abuse scandal. Now let's get back to more of Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Todd Agliolaro and Father Hugh Barber, our guests. We're talking about the crisis in marriage this hour. And I do not know if I have been rude or what, but no one has called. And I invite your calls. We're happy to take your calls. 888-318-7884. Or is it – oh, I beg your pardon. You're going to have to put people on the phone because I have a phone problem. I didn't realize that we had calls. I apologize. So we do have callers. So if you were on the phone and you heard me saying that – You do in fact exist. I'm not denying your existence. I think there's a little problem with my phone. So it's never happened. No, we'll plug it in at the break. Don't worry. Nick will take care of it. Sorry to deal with all that in-house stuff here. That happens when I sometimes I step on a wire that I'm not supposed to step on. But I wanted to ask about young men. Whatever happened to young men? I feel like that you see large numbers, or not, I shouldn't say large numbers, but at least notable numbers of Catholic young women who are getting on board with this theology of the body thing. And I feel like that's you see more and more young women that way. You see some young Catholic men on board with it, but it doesn't seem to be the same proportion, at least from what I'm seeing when you go talk to a young adult group or something like that about the theology of the body. More women than men, but so what's happening to young men? Why are they not? Why don't they want to be dads and husbands at 25 years old? Or are they scared to be? Or what's the? Or could you just stare at me quietly while
I'm thinking about my own son? So I've got a 23-year-old and a 21-year-old
for each other,
and who both don't seem to be any hurry to get married. And I wonder, what did I do wrong? What didn't I model for them correctly? I'm not the only one in that boat, so it's a bit of a mystery to me too. I think when your initial comment about theology of the body, I think, though it's tangentially related, I think that those ideas appeal to women perhaps more naturally, who have a kind of more holistic sense of their bodies and their spirituality than
right. Men have a more instrumental sense of their body.
That's a good way of putting it. So it may just appeal to them more naturally. But I do know a lot of men who adopt the theology of the body principles and teach them and so on. So,
okay,
I'm not sure that's connected to the crisis of courage or crisis of confidence in marriage that's afflicting men. Certainly, you mentioned video games. The world's more entertaining than it's ever been.
Right, but women are not less entertaining. I mean, there's no possible universe where women are less entertaining to men. And I use the word entertaining flippantly, but you know, appealing to men. So
I think there's a confluence of elements. One element might be that there's no particular pressure to marry. In fact, if you marry at 21, people are going to say, well, you're much too young. If you want to marry at 25, well, you're still awfully young. And then finally at 28, I mean, they
why aren't you married
they're
yet?
Worried that you get married too young. So that's an issue. And then there's just the general instability of the institution. And the girls that guys meet, some of them want to marry and have a family, but some of them are very much affected by attitudes regarding roles and so on and so forth. And so that to find a woman that would actually affirm the man's role as a husband and father might be a little bit difficult, even in Catholic circles, I would say.
Yeah.
You know, because there's this expectation of kind of an even division of everything, you know, finances and the way the houses run and work and we all decide everything together. The notion that the husband and wife work together complementarily in their different spheres is not something that's strongly felt. And then you've got divorce. People, you know, if you're from a divorced family, it's something you'd think twice about before you do it. And I mean, there are a whole bunch of reasons that might lead young men to avoid marriage or put it off.
I'm very interested in what you just said, though, Father, because young men what appeals to young men in a certain way is a call to heroism, you know, a call to defend something or fight something or make something, you know.
But don't women do that? Can't she have a career and defend things and fight for things? And,
right.
And that's what they'll say right away.
So masculinity itself.
The guy just kind of goes, okay.
Right.
It.
Because what I'm saying is, if the call to marriage is a kind of call to be a co-feminine partner in marriage, men are not going to answer that call. If the call is to be a man in marriage, they might, but that manhood is not valued.
It's not affirmed, certainly. In fact, it's regarded as maybe one of the most dangerous things in society.
Well, it is. It is one of the most dangerous things in society, but it doesn't make it.
The phrase toxic masculinity never appeared in the world until about 5 years ago, but now it's, you hear it all the time.
But automobiles are dangerous too, but they're still good. I mean, just because men are dangerous in a way. I mean,
boys are always thinking about cars.
Okay. Not always, Father. You were going to say, Ty.
Well, I was referring to the concept of toxic masculinity that has been introduced into our lexicon.
Yeah,
that the kind of an inherent sinisterness to masculinity. I would not leave out though, and we got to remember it's not just marriage side that's diminished. It's and we talked about this I think a few months ago when I was on the show. Sexual activity, even extramarital sexual activity,
right, is down.
Is down, and in the Western world, that would include in all of the first world, including in Asia, there seems to be not just a less desire to get married and settle down and have children and to couple and partner and all of that stuff, but just to be with the opposite sex, just to have. That romantic relations. It's almost too much work for this generation.
If you have the media.
If you don't socialize, if socializing is not what it was.
Not face-to-face anymore. That's right.
Then it's hard to fall into the other things that people fall into, like love or even just sex. I mean, it's not going to happen.
And the elephant in the room here is pornography too. I mean, how could we not mention that?
Thank you.
We're the first generation in the entire history of mankind – where the men coming of marrying age now could possibly, and if you believe the statistics, likely have been exposed to and making use of pornography since puberty.
Yeah,
we're entering a completely uncharted territory in human history. What has that exposure, that chronic exposure, done to the minds of 25 to 30 year olds now and younger when they think about the ends of sex, when they think about being able to subordinate their immediate desires for a longer-term good, which is what marriage is about. And marriage is all about self-sacrifice.
Yeah.
And yet pornography is not. It's about gratification. And so if they're getting gratified in all the ways, including sexually, electronically, not only are they not having face-to-face contact with real women and developing friendships and romantic relationships, they're not disposed towards taking the steps necessary to have a healthy marital sexual relationship.
Right. And then there's that thing about that the more we kind of satisfy an aspect of ourselves, the harder and harder it is to satisfy that. If we're constantly eating, it's hard to really enjoy food. If we're constantly being exposed to pornography, then
when you're bloated with food, you don't want to see another hamburger or a slice of cake.
Tuck, speak for yourself, man. I've never seen a hamburger or a piece of cake I didn't want to have a friendship with. But what am I describing here? When the fact that young men, if you have so used the sexual faculty through pornography and that kind of thing, the faculty itself.
Well, I wouldn't exactly calling that using your sexual faculty, but I get what you mean.
Right. You're gonna have to explain that
to me
off the air.
That's like if someone eats out all the time and never cooks, then they just stop being interested in cooking. They go out,
right?
And this pornography, it's a virtual replacement.
Yeah.
That in an immature mind, and that's when people start looking at it. They never develop the right when they should be developing the instinct of, you know, finding a spouse and taking care of her and raising a family, they just develop this passive, you know, commoditized consumer attitude towards sexual relations.
Yeah,
and
right.
So, you know, they're just not interested. I mean, engagements break up over this and marriages and everything.
Right.
It's just unbelievable.
Right. And the thing is, something I think should be said is that these young men, as you said, they're exposed at a very young age. They're victims of this. I mean, we all at a certain point, we are responsible for the things that we do and perpetuate and all of that. But I do think young men, long before they're young men, when they're 8, 9, 10, 12 years old, are exposed to this pornographic material. And that is a kind of thing that, well, they should have been protected.
There's no question.
They should have been protected.
The experts in this, and I'm not one, but I I listen to them and I read them just like you all do.
Right.
Talk about that early exposure. Almost none of the boys who first get exposed go looking for it. Right. They have that accidental first exposure, and then
which I don't know. Like, it wasn't that easy to have accidental first exposure when I was a kid in the 70s. I mean, you know, there was
you had to go to the liquor store and
right, or somebody had to steal something from their from their dad or
buy
something.
You
know,
like
that kind of stuff. And not my dad, by the way. You wouldn't have found that in my. I just want to make that clear. No, I mean that quite sincerely.
Of course.
But you know, there's a way in which the internet's have just changed the equation.
Not completely. Not just by making it easier to locate the stuff, but to get it passively was the word father used. The ease and the variety. The dirty magazine in high school is one thing, but it's same thing with a video game or the internet. Just this flood of content that you're able to expose yourself.
Ultimately, all of this is just very crafty, satanic setup through technology and media to appeal to our internal senses, our imagination, and our passions, so that we become practically enslaved to those and lose the desire for real things that are outside of us because we can live in that virtual reality. And that's the way the devil's always operated with people. But now we have such a refined, technologically refined way of doing this that people are especially in danger of being victimized by all of that. Yeah.
We're going to do nothing but take calls for the rest of the hour. And anybody who calls and gets through, we're going to give you a free copy of Todd's book, Marriage Marriage and Sex.
20 Answers Marriage and
but
Sex.
But in regard to what you just said, Lent is a really good time for all of us who have the various ways in which we've dulled our ability to actually love other people. Lent gives all kinds of opportunities, and we got a free opportunity for you during Lent. We want to give you a free copy of Making the Most of Lent, A Spiritual Companion. Just go to shop.catholic.com, and you can have that ebook for free, Making the Most of Lent, A Spiritual Companion. Free ebook right now at shop.catholic.com.
Your questions, Catholic answers, live.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
A very wonderful woman I knew had four children, and all four died. And somebody went up to her one day, and they said, "Oh, what a pity." And she said, "Oh, no. What a blessing. If we don't begin to look at everything with the eyes of Jesus, you will become helpless and hopeless."
For more information on Mother Angelica, visit Religious Catalog at EWTNRC.com.
A lot of people think that street evangelization involves yelling out of a bullhorn telling people that they're going to hell. Not so with St. Paul's Street Evangelization. Our methods are non-confrontational and effective. We simply offer information on the Catholic faith, along with rosaries, miraculous medals, and prayer. Pope Francis wrote about how beautiful it is to see street preachers joyfully bringing Jesus to every corner of the earth. Street evangelization is fun and fruitful. Join us today at streetevangelization.com.
Catholic Answers Live Friday panel show edition. Father Hugh Barber and Todd Agliolaro, the director of publishing here at Catholic Answers and the author of 20 Answers, Marriage and Sex, which we are going to give to those who get through on the line today. Let's go to Ryan in Detroit, Michigan, listening on Ave Maria Radio. You waited a long time, Ryan, and I apologize for that, but I didn't realize there was anybody on the phone for a while. Ryan, your question or comment? Do we have Ryan on line three? Ryan.
Yeah, hello?
Yeah, just a little bit of phone trouble here on our end, but your comment or question.
Okay. I guess this discussion has been, like, really nice to listen to because I talk about it with my wife, like, all the time. So there's a lot of different things I'd like to add, but I know I can't because I don't have the time. But I am, I am 31 years old. I've been married for 9 years. I had my first child at 25, and I have three of them. My youngest being 9 months old.
Congratulations.
Good for you.
Congratulations on being awake.
yeah. I'm we're one income family. I'm on my way back from work when I was listening to you guys. She watches the kids at home because it's a lot cheaper than her going to work. Between the two of us, we have 5 bachelor's and master's degrees. So, I mean, it's not like we can't get a job. You know, we can't get a 2-income family. It's just, it is more economically sound for us to have one of us stay home. So, that's the position we're in, given our, you know, student debt and everything. Like, basically, like, everything you guys have just talked about kind of represents, to a certain extent, like,
where
my
you are.
Life, my wife's life.
Okay.
It's kind of amazing, because I find very few other people in my situation. Like, exactly like you said, it's very rare to find someone who's in my situation.
Yeah.
Who got married young, and so my initial question was, you know, given I live in Detroit, Michigan, there's a lot, you know, Archdiocese of Detroit, great Archdiocese. You know, you go into parishes, they'll have thousands of families, but the average, you know, couple will have 2 kids or less. And very rarely you see, like, this 6 or 7 family.
Well, we know what's causing that, Ryan. I mean, there's no question about that. So your question for Father and Todd is?
Well, I think the question is, why is that the case? And I think, first of all, it's because priests don't preach the importance of numerous families to those who are able to have them, and they used to. I mean, they used to. So
yeah.
I think a lot of families that just have 2 kids, it's become a social convention, and if they were challenged gently to consider having more, they would. I mean, I've experienced that myself as a priest, that it was just the suggestion or the mild insistence that, well, given your material status, why wouldn't you have more children than you have? And then they began to think about it, and then they do, you know.
Right.
So I think first
all
of all,
the pressure from everywhere else is going the opposite direction.
First of all, the clergy, and then of course the parents of the young couple, who may also have, because now we have several generations of this, might have false notions about, you know, they want them to be economically prosperous, and so they discourage them from having too many kids. But 2 is not too many. It's not enough, you know, for a family of reasonable means. But that has to be always judged according to their circumstances and everything. So you can't really say there's a certain number of children you're supposed to have in any particular circumstance. The couple has to understand the situation that they're in. And of course, that you didn't need to say that years ago, because it would have sounded absurd. You know, why did you get married if you're not going to have children? But now we have a society where everything militates against it, and it's difficult for some. I really like Ryan's observation that it's economically better for them just to have one earner. I think that's really
remarkable. I presume he means because of daycare, the cost of
But I mean that, yeah.
Well, but you're a hero if you're someone running for office proposing cheaper and cheaper daycare. I think because just I don't know.
Well, this gets back to what we were saying earlier, where the state becomes it usurps the role of the family.
Right.
In this case, yeah.
But so the person listening, Father, look, children are a tremendous carbon footprint. And children are blah, 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 this and that. Okay. Overpopulation and whatever Walter Cronkite would say about this. Okay. So why that's that person, I want you to
you can
say,
see those on the refrigerator door, the little carbon footprints.
Yeah. Little carbon footprints. Yeah.
Handprints, right. Footprints.
Well, but you get what I'm saying. I mean, since the time of Walter Cronkite, who really pushed this idea of overpopulation like a maniac, and it was a maniac idea then, it's a maniac idea now, but it became mainstream. So what is the Catholic response about why do we say, okay, Ryan, and I didn't get Ryan's bride's name. Maybe he said it, but I missed it. But Ryan and his wife, why do we say that's good? Marry at a reasonably young age. Live faithfully to one another. Have lots of children. Why do we say that's good?
You mean contra the objection that it's environmentally unsound?
All the modern objections.
I address that. There's an answer addressing that in my booklet, specifically to the so-called ecological objection to the Church's teaching on contraception. And in fact, this is a question I encountered frequently when I used to do marriage prep. I used to be a diocesan family life minister, and I put thousands of couples through the marriage prep process, and we'd always have a Q&A. And almost inevitably, every weekend, there would be some variation on how can the church be against contraception when the two greatest threats to the world are overpopulation and the destruction of the environment.
Well, there you go.
And human beings are a kind of locust. They're a kind of parasite wearing down Mother Nature. And, you know, there's ways to turn that on its head. First of all, Father mentioned two children isn't enough. It may not be enough from a point of view of what Christian marriage ought to be, but it's not even enough to replace a society, to keep a population growth even.
Right.
It's above the nominal replacement rate, but not everyone's going to get married. Not every woman is going to bear children. So you have to have 2 point something to stay kind of tread water.
Right.
Otherwise, your society starts to die. And of course, the entire Western world
is doing that.
Is below replacement level. Yes. Europe and Japan, which is not Western,
but well beyond the Western world, too.
It's a fait accompli. It's
even in Iran. I don't know if you know that. Yeah, even in Muslim countries,
well,
this is becoming.
They don't forbid it, in spite of what our.
So, but I interrupted you. But.
Well, and that's a first answer. A second answer is that these kind of 70s Paul Ehrlich notions of what overpopulation is going to do to the world are really kind of passé now. I think our view of economics and our evaluation of things like agriculture and energy uses and all that have led us to realize, A, we can make enough food for people to live.
Right.
B, we can live in an efficient way that we have the space and we can dispose of our waste and that sort of thing. And C, we need people in the world. We need people to be inventors and entrepreneurs and farmers and prosperity, which drives health, which drives human flourishing, which drives culture, depends on there being enough people in the world. So quite the contrary, the greatest threat to the Earth, or one of the greatest threats, is underpopulation. And the last thing I'll say is when it comes to contraception, contraceptives themselves are ecological poisons, both the artificial hormones in the pill and in IUDs and that sort of thing, and even in condoms, which is a stat I pulled out from my book. We dump something like 30 billion tons, I think it was billion, 30 billion tons of non-biodegradable latex condom waste into our landfills and our waterways every single year.
This is striking as, I don't know, ironic, given that in the state of California, there's this move to get rid of every plastic straw.
Bags and their straws. Well, they defend it, and they're saying this.
But they're
so
not getting
words.
Rid of the condoms, though.
No, they won't even talk about
because
that.
Because it's defensible. It's like when someone takes a jet to go to an environmentalist conference and it creates a lot of CO2. Yeah. And they said, well, the good we're going to do at the conference is better than the evil of the CO2. They would say the good of keeping another baby off the earth is greater than the evil of putting X amount of latex into the river, which is insane.
It is insane. Okay, so however, that's all economic and sociological, and I agree with all of it, but I want the Catholic, the theological understanding.
Well, this is the point, is that I think that those kind of objections to having children, we need to hit them head on with the light of the Word of God.
Praise God.
And just tell the couples, look, the first commandment that God gave to the human race was increase and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it. Okay, that's what we believe. And we believe that Christ is the bridegroom of the human race. And all of the things, our whole religion is based upon the image of the union of man and woman in marriage and the procreation of children. And we just have to say that's what we're about. And we're not governed by, you know, garbagey theories about overpopulation or ecology. Rather,
I'm grateful to Father for bringing us around to that. I mean, we encourage marriage first and foremost because it's a participation in Trinitarian life. We become co-creators with God when husband and wife love one another in the marital act. They partner in God's creative action, and you're able to with God's help create a new eternal being, which is awesome beyond contemplation. So that's where you start. Not all of this stuff about about the ecology and all that is secondary for sure.
Well, it's not entirely because
– was saying that already in the 17th century.
Right.
But
mass media in the 60s exploded this thing.
Oh, yeah. They tried to terrify us. I remember in elementary school, in public elementary school.
Wait, are you saying that media has an interest in terrifying people? Really? That's how interesting.
So I have to correct myself, by the way, before we switch on. It was 30,000 tons, not 30 million tons. So I didn't want to be too alarmist there. It's still a lot of latex.
Well, I'll tell you what. We have a second topic we want to get to, and we're going to get to it. But we're going to come back and start the second hour with some continuation of this conversation about marriage, only because we got all those people on the phone. I didn't realize they were there, and I do want to address some of their calls. But we're going to finish the work week anyways, by talking about evangelization and the duty to evangelize, a very high duty that a very fascinating article on Catholic Answers Magazine online just this week about young people don't believe in evangelizing either. So maybe we can convince some of them that actually sharing the good news of Jesus Christ, the Son of God, is a positive undertaking, not a negative undertaking. So if you're on the line, don't go anywhere. Hang on. We're going to get to your call when we come back. It is the Friday panel show here at Catholic Answers Live. Our panelists, Father Hugh Barber, chaplain here at Catholic – I say it like a chaplain, but I mean to say the chaplain here at Catholic Answers. And
more than one.
And Todd Egliolaro, a director of publishing here at Catholic Answers. Todd's book that we've been discussing is 20 Answers, Marriage and Sex. You can get that and everything else at shop.catholic.com right now for 15% off. And if we take your call this hour or next, we're going to send you a free copy of 20 Answers, Marriage and Sex. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back with more of our panel show right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com.
CMF Curo is the country's first Catholic healthcare ministry to provide an affordable health sharing solution rooted in Catholic teaching and community. Learn more at mycatholichealthcare.com/podcast. That's mycatholichealthcare.com/podcast.